I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Yeah, what's up, y'all? What? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody?
2017.
Did y'all see the heavens open up in that motherfucker right there? And as soon as he did it, the motherfucking rain started coming outside. Did y'all see that shit?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
It's raining. That's because we got Paul Gio in the house. He bringing St. Louis with the rain and stuff.
I'm telling you. See?
You can say something, Paul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll defend myself.
That's St. Louis downpour.
I don't think it's not St. Louis. It's 2017.
Exactly. So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting. Stories, I can't even talk right now. Craft and shit like that.
Okay.
So you hear everybody's voice. First, let's start with my girl on the left, Lisa Bolakaja, the street nerdist,
mm-hmm.
a.k.a.
Sophister Ratchet.
Sophister Ratchet cousin.
Your favorite Afro Ninja's auntie. Hello. Hey, and you know what? I don't appreciate the stank when I walked up in the room, y'all.
Wait, 30 minutes late?
I've only been 30 minutes late? Two times to the podcast.
Late to the podcast.
True.
And each time, I have a legitimate reason. I left. I was leaving at 10:20.
This is a great work of fiction, right?
This
here
is 10:20.
Bacon free dog.
I have a time. It only takes me an hour to get here. 10:20. I'm walking out, getting the dog his pill. Mm-hmm. I'm straight. I've got to go. Dog would not take the medicine. Now,
what did you give him?
She has to take these.
What kind of pills we talking?
No.
What I meant is, what's in the pill that you're giving them? Is it just a pill, or are you giving them a snack with the pill? Or
the blue pill?
Oh no, we have. She takes several. She takes like five different medications. Mm-hmm. So it's like I have different ways I have to like sneak it into her.
Got it. That's
so we did three, and I had two more that I had to give in, and she would not. Like she knew I was leaving and would not take it.
I got photos. The dog ate my homework.
Anime
the dog ate my homework.
Anime.
That's what I hear.
Anime. Don't listen to them. Anime. If you could speak, you could tell them. Your viciousness. Anywho, but I made it.
If you cared about this dog, you would get it in your mouth.
I would bring her, but she's very old and ornery. And you know,
you are an enabler.
I try. Anyway, I'm here.
Right on.
I'm here. At least
late.
I text and let you know.
You did.
Every 5 minutes. Yeah. But I'm there when it counts. I was there 2 minutes. Actually, I arrived yesterday the same time you did. I waited in my car 5 minutes to give you time to get inside the building.
Oh, that's right.
Before I walk behind you.
What?
She cray-cray. She cray-cray.
We're talking about today.
Yeah, that's most days.
You get the stack of time chips?
Most times I'm here half hour, 40 minutes. Because Patrick be here before I do.
True. But that's the immediate past.
You know, anyway. You know what?
The present, the immediate now.
See, I done chosen the wrong squad, y'all. See, they supposed to back you up and
this
uplift you.
This is your Wu-Tang Clan, first
You know,
of all.
The Wu-Tang Clan is supposed to be together forever. I don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm. We're more like diggable plants, I think.
One hit wonders and then out.
Good lord. Anyway, I'm here.
That's what's up.
All right, who else is in here?
So, we got my man here with us today. We haven't had him on. You've only been on once, huh?
I've only been on one time.
I thought twice.
That's because he's always
long-time
out of town.
Long time listener, one time talker.
No, I thought he's been on two times.
He's always out of town.
Oh, that's right.
You know?
Pretending
like he,
on
pretending like he got a job.
How dare you?
You know?
How dare
you? Everybody, Paul Gio, writer, woo! Producer, creator, Pimp Dog himself.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis in the house.
Uh-huh.
Who? What's up, Paul?
Mm-hmm. How are you?
Welcome mm-hmm. to the show, buddy.
I'm glad to be back.
Thank you, man. We're glad to have you. And then we got my man over there, Chris Derrick, from the writing directing team of the Derrick Brothers.
Yes, I'm here today. I said on time, actually early.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
They going to get you.
Lisa. I know. Don't get Chris started because Chris can go from 0 to 10 in like 2 seconds. You know, you just 10. Say the wrong word, the wrong film, yeah, exactly. And it's like
10,
60.
And then we got my man in the house, big bro, Jeffrey Thorne, you guys.
What's up?
Writer, writer, producer himself, author.
Comic book maker.
Comic book dude.
Oh yeah, his comic.
Yeah,
mosaic.
I need you closer to the mic whenever you do spoke though.
He's also an actor.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. not an actor. No, not an actor.
Oh, we got proof. We got VHS. Oh, yeah, my mama got VHS tapes.
Ooh. We got it on tape.
Talk about recent past. Prehistoric. Pre-diluvian.
Child, you still be coming on TV. I'll be catching them episodes. Yeah. My mom be going, Jess on TV again. No, I'll be like, all right,
I'm the
mom.
Guy that ate that guy.
He still cast them checks. He still cast them residuals.
19 cents.
Why did he even mail that?
I'm waiting for one that says I owe them money.
Yeah. Post is, you know, like
post is cost more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ugh,
exactly. And then we got Linnell White in the house, you guys, writer, director, yay, producer herself.
After being banned from the show for almost a year.
What?
Banned?
I was
not invited.
At least
two or three times to come.
I was not invited to the show.
A couple times you've been out of town.
You've been out of town. I go, don't
listeners,
make me pull out my computer.
And then you were at the Writers Guild.
I have not been here.
You ain't
since
been
last
here,
May.
But you've been invited.
Well, yes, yeah, since the Civil War.
Right, Civil War. Yes, the Civil War. Yeah. You remember that, right?
Yeah.
The beef. Remember the beef.
We squashed that.
I have not.
I have seen the error of my ways.
I'm right. Team Cap.
I will be Team Cap until he messes up.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be never.
But no, I've learned
Linnell's
to come to
really
like him.
Happy now.
I know, because you know
I'm happy, but then honestly, the year started off with Lisa saying,
"What
on the podcast?
What
on the podcast?
What?
Let's go back.
Okay.
Oh, dang.
What? It's a new year.
Rogue One.
Wait, what?
Is better than the Empire Strikes Back.
I stand by that.
What?
I'm not ashamed to say that.
Team Rogue One.
Yes. Now we got a new fight.
Order?
Now we got a new fight.
Here's
and
why.
I'm not even on not even in terms of special effect. I don't
count
that.
First of all,
that.
No John Williams music, so it's not good at all.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
No John Williams music.
It's a new day. It's a whole new world.
Empire Strikes Back was not
a whole new world.
Are you kidding me?
It was a middle. It had no end.
It was a movie.
Rogue One was a footnote because it came in after what they talked about.
Greatest movie ever made.
And Paul, okay, Paul, look at Paul and
Paul,
and Hilliard.
Hill, you want to go grab some tacos? Let them fight it out.
Okay, you jump right into the middle of Nerdville, didn't you?
Rogue One was the shit.
It was a heist movie, right? And Empire to me has so many different levels: a romance,
okay,
the training
there
of Luke.
There was romance in Rogue One.
Barely.
The romance
barely.
Between me and Donnie Yen on the screen.
No, I'm talking about on screen, not in your mind.
And Riz Ahmed is my side guy on the side.
Into Star Wars,
you know,
in Rogue
it was
One.
Kind of low key, but it was there, and I felt it. I felt something.
Hey,
yeah.
Wait
I just
a minute.
Is not
you,
a complete film.
You could compare the romance between
closer.
Those two monks. Okay.
Yes. And Han and Leia?
Yes.
And here's why.
What?
Yes.
I'll tell you why. Because
yes.
When your husband goes out to save your blind ass
yes.
husband
yes.
goes out into the middle of all that cannon fire
say
to
it.
Save the day.
Say it.
Okay. If that was just best friend
yes.
and he died there, that'd have been some grief I'd have got over. I might have wore a little chain or got a tattoo to say my boy
we
died.
Thank you.
See if there was an opportunity for him. Yeah, but it was
dude,
it
was, he went out
was,
there
was,
and
there
went
no
down
day
hard
extra.
To his
here's the
man
only thing.
Die.
There was no bombshell moment in Rogue One.
You don't need a bombshell.
Of like,
you didn't need
I'm
one.
Your father. I mean, that right
no,
there.
See, here's my
makes
biggest
Rogue
problem
one.
With
it's
Rogue
a simple
One.
Story.
I'll tell you, there's one problem with Rogue One.
We didn't open this damn door.
Your own
and I'll stand by this. I'll stand by this constantly.
You can stand by all by yourself.
I'm with Chris. He's not standing alone.
On the corner.
The fact that they didn't use the Death Star to actually just destroy that whole installation as opposed to trying to cherry pick that little laser, that's a mistake to me.
Yes.
It's a mistake to me.
The last 20 minutes.
Give her to everything.
Yeah.
Just give her to everything. You know what? Like, who's that guy's name? His name is Ben.
We've already forgotten the movie. It was so forgettable.
You know, like, wow. Ben Mendelsohn. What's his name? He's like I don't even remember his name now. His name. See, that's the problem about the Rogue One. I didn't like.
Yeah.
No memorable names for any character.
Or memorable characters other than the wisecracking robot.
All you need
I
to know
the wisecracking robot.
Donnie Yen. That's
but
all
see,
you
that's
need
his
to know,
name.
Man.
That's his name, but that's not the
name.
Character's name.
All about Jen Erso. What are
hey.
You talking about?
That's right.
I don't
that's
care.
Right. You need to look.
Him. That's all you need to know.
Okay.
Him right there. My husband right there.
Ever.
Hold up.
I didn't mean to just toss. a grenade and watch it blow up.
You know what? Yes, you did.
That had been irking me.
Yes, you did.
Exactly what you did.
Hold on. You walk in a room with a grenade with the pin already out. You don't mean to throw it at anybody?
You laid down
the pin was already in the seat. 30 minutes okay. Late. There you go. There you go.
Well, I got to be tactical.
That's my training. That's her training.
Speaking of tactical. Okay. Speaking of tactical.
Yes.
Donnie Yen.
Transition.
Transition. Linnell's got to tell us about being at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
And seeing one of my favorite writer directors.
Yes.
Who she is?
Tell.
Okay. So there I was at the Oscars last week,
mm-hmm.
minding my own business.
Chilling.
It was
chilling.
It was a nice enough. It was a nice
enough little dress.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, her the hair, the makeup, the dress, whatever. You
face
know.
Beat. Hair laid.
Seeing all the Moonlight people. Mm-hmm. The Rock, mm-hmm. and, you know, so I'm all
Hi, Dwayne. Hi, Dwayne.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting in towards the rear,
mm-hmm.
and I turn around. I see this very lovely African-American, or black woman,
mm-hmm.
makeup flawless, and I'm like, gosh, she looks so familiar. I don't know. But let me not stare at her, because that'd be weird.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, okay, let me wait till the commercial break, and I'll get up, and I'll stretch my legs.
Right.
And then, so I stand up, and I turn around, and I take a really good look at her. And it's Usain Palsy.
Really?
And I'm blown away. And I'm just like, okay, do I geek out? What do I do? How do I approach this? Awkward.
Mm-hmm.
But I just sort of, you know, she was standing there. And I just said to her, I was like, I just want to make sure. Because I'm like, are you Usain Palsy? She's like, oh, yes. And she has this lovely French mm-hmm. accent. And I said, I love you. Like, I love you. And then I saw it ran. Then
Empire's better than Rogue One.
Empire's better than Rogue One.
Let me get your opinion on the Rogue One. Yeah.
She was right.
And I just said, you know, Dry White Season, I love it. And
Sugarcane Alley.
Yes. Oh. And I told her about the double feature she'd done at the Arrow like mm-hmm. a year ago. And I went there. She said, oh, you were there. How wonderful. And then we started talking about, I was like, yeah, and you mentioned you want to do a Bessie Coleman movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, she's like, yeah, I'm working on that. I was like, well, if you need a writer, let me know.
Smart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I told her that you fly planes and stuff too. Like, I am the reincarnation of Bessie Coleman.
I'll give you details.
I'll give you details, feeling, memories.
She's like, I'm working on. We got to get the money. I was like, all right, mm-hmm. cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was like, just people you see.
Put it out there.
She's totally delightful.
Yeah.
I was kind of. It was weird seeing her so far, like, not, she should be in the front,
right.
in my opinion.
Right. Right.
But this is the way the world works with right. the Oscars. It's like, we want Emma Stone mm-hmm. and Ryan Gosling in the mm-hmm. front.
Well, the nominees are all up front.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then it goes
And then
backwards.
It kind of, right. yeah.
It's the biggest high school in the country.
That's exactly what it felt like. That's exactly what it felt like. If you're not on every people's radar right here and now, then
you,
it's kind of right. like, you don't yeah. exist anymore. And yeah. then I got to see her face when the whole La La Land Moonlight thing mm-hmm. happened. I looked over and Usain Palsy's got her hand over her mouth like, what the
right.
going on?
Right. So tell me, okay, hold on.
Because she was there in the room.
Yes. Yeah.
I was going to say, so yeah. what was it like being there?
Okay. You saw
Get
it. You saw it kind of coming. Okay. So I'm sitting there and, you know.
You're talking about Moonlight.
Yeah. La La Land. Faye Dunaway says La La Land mm-hmm. winner, right? And then you start to see some commotion in the background,
mm-hmm.
like a stage manager dressed in black running in the back. I'm like, oh,
like an NWA concert or something.
running back and forth in the back. And I'm like,
yeah,
like through the set decorations and stuff,
right,
like creeping
right.
around. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird.
Right.
And then you yes, and then you see a lady in a red dress with another envelope, and she's frantically trying to work her way to the front of the La La Land crowd. And that by then, like the second or third producer's talking, and he's like, we lost, by the way. And then that's when they open the real envelope and say, oh no, it was Moonlight. And then at first everyone's kind of like, oh, they're just giving props to Moonlight. You know, they're just being considerate. Yeah, exact for a split second. And then he's like, no, this is serious. Moonlight won.
Yeah.
And then it was a collective.
And he was the producer, director.
Jordan producer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought he was very gracious.
He was great.
The way he did it.
But it was a collective in the room, every man, woman, and child in there.
When he snatched that thing out of Warren Beatty's hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
That wasn't so gracious. Well, like, that's
but Warren Beatty was kind of.
Warren Beatty could not figure out what was going on, and
he really didn't know what was happening.
See, no, I will defend Beatty.
Me too.
Because
he was a victim of
saw
error.
That it was not the right thing.
Yeah. Right.
And that's why he was acting so weird.
Because he's right. like, something's wrong. Yeah.
Because it said Emma Stone.
Right.
That she wasn't nominated for Best Picture.
Right.
And
shockingly.
You know, he doesn't know what to do.
Right.
And
right.
instead of just turning and going, hey, we got the wrong envelope.
He's like, Faye,
he went with the movie.
Help me out.
And Faye just screams out, La La Land.
Right.
Because that's what she saw.
And then it goes,
the biggest thing on the
outside of the envelope, it says, best actress.
Right. So they. And it said on the back.
On the outside. So on the outside of the red envelope, it says best actress.
So he's. I mean, think about what's happening. A billion people are watching you. You're on the stage. They hand you the wrong envelope, and it's clearly the wrong envelope. You have the option of going, excuse me, this is the wrong envelope, which that alone is like a giant thing.
That's going to be gasoline.
Okay.
Right.
So he leans to her and says, I can vibe this. Is what should we do? Is the vibe between the two of them?
She wasn't feeling what should we do. She was like, oh, you're messing around.
She thought he was messing around. And she just read it.
You're being Warren.
So,
but see, this is the question. I don't know. And no one said this. Do they need reading glasses? Because maybe they don't know what they have to read until, and they're just opening it.
Well, she was able to read. They were able to read
wrong envelope. So the two people on stage have nothing to do with this, which is why two of the accountants got fired after this.
Yeah, because he was tweeting. What is that? That's like, you know what that is?
But let's Donald Trump always moment. Remember when you watch the Oscars, regardless of who, quote unquote, I have my air quotes up, wins, it's not about merit. Right, it's not like the best athlete beat the other best athlete. It's a vote of people.
This is the first Oscars I watched in over 12 years because a friend of mine was nominated, and
I think I know who that friend is.
It's only Eric Heiser. Yeah.
It's
the I sat behind him,
and I watched it, and I was like, "This is why I don't watch this garbage anymore." But here's the thing that killed me more than anything about what happened is once they realized the error was made. There was such disrespect, in my opinion, paid to Moonlight because Kimmel comes out and starts telling Jordan Horowitz, you guys should get Oscars too. You guys are so cool by saying that they didn't win. Well, no shit, they didn't win.
What was he supposed to do?
And everybody's like, that guy was so amazing and so classy.
Yeah.
It's like, no, he just did the right thing.
He did what you're supposed
to do. And Moonlight is standing up there on stage waiting for their
moment. Not giving their speech.
And
not
Kimmel and all the other white people are making jokes and talking about
And then Beatty had to explain, what I was doing was.
And they're just standing there, and that killed me.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it took that moment away. Right. They can never
get that back.
They can never have that again.
Because it forced Barry Jenkins to talk fast.
Sure.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Which he shouldn't have done.
Which the show was already running over.
And it's a groundbreaking movie in so many different ways that if they had truly been gracious, what they would have done is extended the little broadcast for a couple of minutes, which they've done in the past for way less reason.
Yeah.
And let them give at least their acceptance speech, which I'm sure would have been gorgeous considering what the subject matter was.
Right.
I just want to point out one other thing that kind of irked me about the Moonlight and of it all. So we've had a predominantly black casted film win Best Picture before. So 12 Years a Slave won a few years ago, and now we have Moonlight winning. But what is the deal with giving Best Director? You didn't give Best Director to a black man in that case in either one of
to
those films.
McQueen. Well, look, I said that on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. I said they were going to split it. Because that's how that works.
It seems like that's still the barrier that we can't seem to get past.
It's the same.
Look. I feel this Oscar so white thing that been rolling out the last 2 years, that's actually chump to me because I feel now I don't want to be, I'm not getting to that. Okay, I'm going to change that out. It's chump to me because black people have gotten awards for those acting categories before. Mm-hmm. Outside of
awards are nominated.
No, they've won the awards for acting. But, you know, they've won.
Denzel Hallie, Octavia,
Octavia, and Lou Gossett, and
I'm just not hearing a lot of plural.
Let me just say this.
No. But what I'm saying is,
watch where he goes.
There's been
just you in his head, right?
Now there's no black director.
Watch
outside of John Singleton, who's been nominated. Bradford Young got robbed. From
do you have some feelings about that?
Arrival.
For Arrival.
Yes, no, Precious. Lee Daniels got nominated for Best Director.
I'm saying who wins the thing because you can get nominated because John Singleton got nominated. Mm-hmm. But can you win the thing?
Right. You
can't.
Can
a non-white person win the thing? Now you can go way, way back to that guy named James Wong Howe in the 50s, who I think he might have won. But it's like it's so rare. It's so complicated and it's so difficult. And it kind of goes back to my thing I was saying before about do they not think that black people can write because they don't win a lot of that stuff? Mm-hmm. It's like do they not think that black people can direct these films and stuff like that? Now, the first thing I saw after Barry Jenkins won was the next day on the paper. The next day, I'm not trying to read that much internet anymore. But it was like there's this takedown piece on him where they're comparing like all these shots from Moonlight with this stuff from
Wong Kar-wai's
work. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like, That's so bullshit because every filmmaker imaginable
is influenced by everybody.
For sure.
Language. Yeah.
You know, it's the grammar of the piece.
Tarantino's been stealing from people forever.
Look, literally nobody shot for shot.
Right.
It's not just shot for shot.
Star Wars.
City on Fire.
Right.
The last act of City on Fire.
Hidden Fortress, anybody?
Is Reservoir Dogs. They even named Mr. White, Mr. Pink, and shit like that in the movie. And it's like, did people not care?
Here's why. It's the same thing that happened in the NFL after it was desegregated. For decades, you couldn't get a black quarterback, right? Because the quarterback's the brain position. The guys who had been quarterbacks in college, winning awards, you know, All-American or whatever the freaking trophies are, as soon as they get to the NFL, then they get scouted and they get brought in. But as soon as they get in, the position that got them attention is denied to them for decades. Also, no black coaches, no head coaches for decades. Mm. Guys running the defense for the head coach, he's a killer, but he can't get above this position because there's a general perception of these are the brain positions, we can't trust you in it. You might panic at the last moment, whatever.
Same thing with women.
Right.
Same thing with women.
Right.
And what happens is no one says it out loud. No one is writing any sort of like, now look, don't hire any black directors because, you know, they're going to freak out when things get... It's not like
that.
It's a rule of thumb. It's a general acceptance of something. That's what I always say is no conspiracy is necessary if we all agree. I don't need to talk to you about it.
There are certain conspiracies.
I don't know that there's a back room of shady cigar-smoking guys. No. It's just a bunch of guys.
Yeah. Yes, there is.
A bunch of people. And they see someone not like themselves and instantly distrust. That's why there's 3% directors that are female. That's ridiculous.
I'll speak on something that I know is essentially that I've... Okay, so I used to work at a completion bond company. This is like 9 years ago.
Oh, Christ.
You had a regular job?
And, yeah. And don't shake your hand like that.
Well, it's a completion bond company.
Now, okay, so...
It's getting rough there. Come on.
Two very, 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 like... crazy things happened at that job when I was there.
See, I just told you.
Stop it.
Rough
don't
there.
Help him. He's on the wrong team.
We did the that movie with Heath Ledger when he died. Mm-hmm. Okay? So Heath Ledger dies, and this is the movie done by...
Dr. Parnassus.
I'm there for like 3 months, and then that hits us, you know? Mm-hmm. And, oh, my God, everything's crazy.
See?
And...
it's intense there.
So our... the boss had shut down Terry Gilliam's film, the movie before that.
The one about the Lost in La Mancha.
Yeah, La Mancha. Mm-hmm. So we kind of said, I owe him. I can't let this movie die. And they would just, you know, all this, they were going to pull out essential element clause, all this kind of stuff for Heath Ledger. And that was coming out. Mm-hmm. Now, we have an opportunity to do The Miracle of St. Anne's. The Spike Lee movie.
Mm-hmm.
Not doing it because he went over budget on Malcolm X. Wait a minute, Malcolm X.
He's a different standard. He's absolutely
so that's what I'm saying. The conspiracy.
Have to call anybody becomes Spike Lee.
But they all
what
said,
was our rule about directors that are blocked out of the budget?
Right. Never again. And I'm saying to myself, that's a Warner Brothers movie. And he went over budget and paid for it himself. He got all those people like Oprah and Spike Lee, all those people to pay for it. So the movie didn't go over budget.
He just ran out of money.
And I was like, that's 20-some years ago, and you're still holding that against him.
It's crazy.
So that's why I feel like there is the conspiracy.
It's not a conspiracy. It's America. Everyone pretends that Hollywood is somehow separated from the rest of the country. It's not. It's just the same corporate structure that, I don't know, Exxon might have. We just make something different than drilling oil. I'm not absolving these people. I'm not by no means absolving them of their individual guilt. What I'm saying is that nobody needs to check with anybody. There's nobody calling up the head of CAA denying women jobs. There's no studio head saying, oh, Christ, we could have Denzel, but he's black. No one's doing that. They're not doing it that way. There's a different set of paradigms. There's a different set of rules for non-white, non-straight, non-male.
That's
right. And no one's got a list in front of them. They don't need it. It's just been the way it's
always
been.
That's just the way it is, yeah.
So what you're seeing is...
it's not a conspiracy. It's just everyday business.
Yeah. It's
business coupled with ignorance.
That's correct.
Yes. It's because, like, here's a quick story.
Tell us.
There's a, you know, it went all over the internet and everything that Fox is racist and stuff because they never tried to sell Empire overseas, and Empire would have done so great, and it only sold in America. And that's categorically false, because I was in those meetings and I talked to those executives that they busted their ass trying to sell that show overseas, and it did not sell. Huh. But that's the business part where the ignorance come in, is they assumed it didn't sell because it was too black. It didn't sell because it was too American.
Right.
Oh. It is an American, like, wholeheartedly very specific American story. It has nothing to do with the, you know, race of the characters. Mm-hmm. But that's where the ignorance comes in. They just check it off. Oh, another black thing doesn't sell.
Right.
So we're not going to try that the next time.
That's right.
You know, and it's just...
So the number of chances gets limited. That's what happens.
And so they're not always looking at the content, is what I'm hearing.
I don't think they care about the content. I think they care about...
It's commerce to them. This is what's so weird, is we create art, and yet it's commerce.
Here's a teaser for a movie that will be a reasonably solid hit. This is just the trailer. Will Smith standing in a white room. He's at the far end. The camera's tracking in towards him. He's doing nothing. Just wearing regular clothes. Let's say they're black and gray. Gray t-shirt, black sort of leather jacket, and just jeans, nothing major. He's just standing there looking serious at the camera, and the camera's slowly tracking in towards him, and maybe you see little things, little testimonials pop up on the screen of other movies he's done and his great performances in them, right? And you finally get close to Will, and the last thing is, and he did this Oscar-winning performance, and it blacks out, right? And then you see the title of the film, White Room, okay? And then the actual film is Will standing in front of a freaking white wall for 2 hours. Hmm. No one's going to check it for content. They're going to see where they can sell it. Mm-hmm. And if a bunch of countries buy it, there will be White Room 2, where they'll change his clothes.
Yes.
And he'll stand in that white room, and the camera will slowly track in on him for 2 hours, and people will say it's genius. Well,
I just did an interview with some website, and I was talking about this very thing, is that now... You know, in features, the reason that so many feature writers are gravitating towards television, and why I will absolutely debate anyone that the best writing is happening in television right now versus features, is TV, the writer is still king to a certain extent. In features, it has become that a movie, not only just to get green light, but even through the entire development and sometimes production process, is a committee of people, and one of the biggest entities in that committee is the marketing department.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're car salesmen. They're not writers. They're not artists. Right. They're, you know, and they have huge input into what movies get greenlit and what movies don't, and how a movie is produced and how a movie is released and marketed. And it's why there's so much garbage being piled on top of garbage.
And going back to what you said about trying to market Empire, those guys, they may be coming in with very severe prejudices where they do limit things like, well, it's a black movie.
They do.
It's a black movie. But they're presenting their data, the supposed to just be statistical data from the marketing department. Here's who we can sell to. Here's what somebody bought, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But we all know that these things can be manipulated according to desire, right? Maybe I personally like Charlize Theron more than I like Rosario Dawson attractive-wise, right? So I'm going to make her the queen in my fairy tale movie instead of looking at Rosario Dawson, and I'm going to find data that backs that up. And then when I present it to the big committee that decides on Huntsman 2 or Huntsman 1, that's the choice that they're presented with. And you're like, oh, well, the bean counter guy said this. You know, she's got the high, what they used to call TVQ. Sounds logical. They're trying to reduce it to math when you can't.
Right.
And that's the thing that no one in town wants to admit. It's always a crapshoot. Every movie's a crapshoot. Every TV show is a crapshoot. You cannot front load it. You cannot guarantee box office. You cannot guarantee asses in seats.
Right.
So you just can't.
You can't force anything to go viral.
No,
you can't.
So this is interesting to me about this television and feature debate about where is this going to sell and everything like this. I mean, we were there at the thing with Billy Ray, and they're saying they're selling these these products overseas
for a lot of money.
And
shows are profitable.
Right off the bat, all the money. And it's kind of like, I know there's certain shows, something like Better Call Saul is like a seriously American type show. Mm-hmm. You know, the Hell on Wheels is an American type show. So I kind of look at it as like there's something else going on about why there's so much control over
it's a slow burn.
The content in films. But to me, I always say, I think this is what I think it is, is that movies are not they're not entertainment. Movies have been like movies are the commercials to kick off all this other ancillary revenue. That's all they really, I think that's all they do, because I don't know too many television shows that have toys kicked up after them and all this kind of stuff like this.
You mean blockbusters, though? I mean, you're not talking about...
that's all that gets made now anymore. So, you know, unless you're making stuff like Moonlight for $1 million,
right,
kicking ass on the Oscars for $1 million, what movie cost the next lowest that got the best Oscar? That's a question for the, like the savants.
Yeah.
Find that out. But that's the thing. I don't know, because I think it's a lie, or I think it's that they feel that marketing has to say, particularly because who are the big players in town really? Disney, mm-hmm. Universal, and they got those theme parks, and they got those toys, and Disney has Star Wars and Marvel, and they have all those toys and the damn Halloween crap and the masks for people to wear and the cosplay crap, and it's like that's what all the movies are for. That's what they're all for.
Cosplay crap.
I'm just saying that, not like in.
I'm gonna get some letters now.
Dear, like the theme parks.
Dear nerd folks, you know, it's okay.
No, it's fine. The theme parks are fine, but I feel like that's robbed the movies from being cool now, because they never get to be cool anymore. Like one of the cool movies I saw last year was Arrival. We were talking about mm-hmm. it earlier. That's a movie that I don't even know why, like how it got made.
Because really good producing.
And
a passion. Somebody's passion probably wanted to get it done.
It's true, but 15 years ago, that's a no-brainer.
Well, let's talk about Eric. Eric made his bones, at least in terms of Hollywood, writing high-budget horror movies that were franchise movies.
Mm-hmm.
He did his best, I would say, to infuse each one of those sequels or prequels with something unique and fun and geeky and all the stuff we would like going to see it. But at the end of the day, he wasn't in charge of any of those movies. He parlayed that into making the movie with Paul Walker.
The Hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very small movie with a big global star not doing the thing that he's known for.
Right.
So everybody floats their boats nicely. He gets to show he's more versatile than you expect, which he surprisingly actually did show that.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric gets to get his feet wet in the producerial role. It made enough money, it did what it was supposed to do, that he can come back after that, and that's not counting all the backstage crap that I'm not allowed to talk about, where he can say, for slightly more money, let me do this really interesting sci-fi story, which isn't your average sci-fi story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a testament to his writing and his production team that that movie got as far as it did, because mm-hmm. genre films that aren't Star Wars generally don't get that far, and when they do, it's just for special effects.
Right.
Right? So what I think you're right on a certain score is that there is a huge amount of corporate. Hollywood has always been a corporate town. It's just that the corporations that ran it used to be like Detroit being run by the car companies. There were no other corporations running that town. It was just guys who made cars. Here it was just people who made movies. Now that's not the case. There are these global entities that have lots of different things going on. So yeah, there are going to be a stack of these ridiculous tentpole movies like the Transformers, which I'm sorry, are crappy from my point of view. As a fan, not as a writer, because I don't go see them. After they did the, let's call them the Negro
the Jigabots.
The Jigabots. I was out. But I literally walked out as soon as they said one line. But remember, those movies are the movies you're describing. They're made, it doesn't matter what the internal, intrinsic, whatever we want to call quality is. As long as it hits a minimum quality visual standard and has a lot of robots breaking a lot of crap, nobody's fact-checking. Right. Mm-hmm. But other movies do get made by these studios. They're just sort of lost at the end of the year, I think, in the polish of, look at this thing we blew up, basically. Right. Look how we blew up the moon in our movie. Look how we sank the entire continent in our movie.
That's how we destroyed London.
Again.
Why did London get the nod all of it? Why is everyone wiping out London? Like, leave London
alone.
The
epicenter of the universe.
Because it's PC.
Yeah, I guess it's like it's okay.
It's a place we can blow up.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right.
And it's now, you know, I call them the Michael Douglas movie, but that, you know, that $70 million movie doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's a $200 million movie,
where
it's, like Chris said, you know, it's 10 or less.
Right.
And it's because, you know, the movie studios used to be movie studios, and now they're all tiny, tiny parts of giant conglomerates. This is what terrifies me about the upcoming negotiations, and that, you know, if we're talking about striking, and we're not going to have the leg to stand on that we used to have, because now, you know, the revenue that the movie and TV studios generate for these giant conglomerates is so small, they're not going to give a shit.
They don't care.
If we're on strike for 30 days or 60 days or 120 days, because they're not getting hurt like they used to get hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, because it used to be, I mean, it's what, Sony, what is that? What, you know, what piece of it, you know, and Viacom,
and every year they
Comcast,
say we're going to get out of the movie business. They don't every year.
And
1 year they will.
Right.
So that, but that's a whole other thing. But because of that, that the movie now, you have to have this giant $200 million thing, because the only way they'll greenlight it is when the marketing people and the business people do the numbers, like, well, we can make dolls and we can make cards and we can make this and we can make lunch boxes and widgets and all this.
And that gap between the 10 or 20 to the 200 is because their advertising budget, calling ancillary,
right.
You're like, well, we're going to spend a minimum amount to advertise this movie regardless of what you spend. Mm-hmm. So up to this point, this is what we've allocated for an up to $20 million movie. Anything into the $30 million range, we're not going to spend the kind of money we'd spend on a $200 million movie. Right. That's ridiculous.
They don't want a movie that solely relies on box office to reap its money back.
Right.
They you know,
they want McDonald's
disclosure.
Toys.
Take that movie, $70 million. There weren't any disclosure lunchboxes. Right?
No little suits.
Little business suits in Target. Right.
Disclosure,
Tearaway business suits.
Right.
Yeah. There's no Mad Men business suits. Right.
It's sad. But then the good thing is, but then the half full look at it is because, and this is why I think movie studios, like the movie theater experience, which I adore and is so important and personal to me, I think is dying to the point where it's only going to be the giant event things
like
or the little art house stuff because everything now is streaming and it's crossing over. You know, Netflix, Amazon, they're making features.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's, on one hand for us and everything, that's good because you can get that movie made that couldn't be made for the last 10 years.
That's
Mm-hmm. It's just...
I think too, and it's interesting you point us movies. In that direction, it's that, it's terrifying in some way to watch a giant tower fall. Right. And what we've had is this paradigm of these three or four big studios and these three or four networks for certainly for most of mine and Paul's lives still. There's kids now that have grown up without that paradigm. But watching Godzilla fall, even though you won, you better get out of the way. It's Godzilla, But the upside of that, to completely mix metaphors, is you can have a lot of little boats that couldn't float before. That were not allowed to float before. There were three gates and six gatekeepers before. Mm-hmm. Now, yes, it's scary because it's wide open, but it's wide fucking open. Mm-hmm. So, right now we're probably seeing the demise of the quiet little movie for the most part, unless they're made foreign or some group of people really has a passion project or something like that. And by quiet little movie, I mean like Glory or a Soldier Story or something like that, right? Not quiet, not little, but you can't make it anymore, right?
And not here. I mean, it's always interesting to me. You see these really fascinating foreign films come out.
Yeah.
You know, most people are not, I mean, are they expecting to lose their shirts?
Different models.
They can't be. You know?
Look at the BBC is a good example. If you watch BBC shows and then see movies that come out of England, you see a clear, constant crossover of actor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're probably not making as much, which is why some of them come over
are coming
here
over
to be
here.
In big movies.
Some of them?
Well, whatever.
All of them.
What did they say in what's that Robert Townsend movie? The big one.
Hollywood Shuffle.
Homeboy's like, ho's got to eat too.
Yeah.
I mean, you go where the money is.
Yeah.
But the way their home system works, partly because it's government subsidized, is that there's no stigma. There's no caste system. It's just actor goes here, actor goes there. Movies made for this amount. TV shows made for this amount. Blah, 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 blah. And it's very clean and small, right? But also those movies, for whatever reason, don't generally go global. There's a sense in Hollywood, and Hollywood always in quotes because it doesn't really exist the way people think it does. There's a sense here that movie I make here is supposed to go global, regardless of size, of budget, regardless of anything.
That's true.
So, but that model, what we were calling a British model before the mics got put on, that's the model that serves all of us. It doesn't just serve the creators. It also serves the producers. You can get in and out for a smaller amount. You make a shorter run if it's a TV series. You make a quote-unquote smaller movie if it's a movie. But if it blows up, well, then the revenue is there to make a bigger or longer thing going back again, right? It's just, it's taking a while for this news to get to the American dinosaur brain. And I think partly it's the corporate influence saying, well, let's not get rid of the McDonald's Happy Meal toys just yet. But it's coming. It may not come in a way that will service me. It may not come fast enough to service me at my age. But guys, your age group and below, that paradigm will have completely shifted. Your movies will be distributed in the, whatever the new way that is establishing itself now. Yeah. So there may be an option. A theater may be an option rather than the only thing, mm-hmm. right? Where I could watch it at home, but there's this new kind of theater that I can go to with a big enough screen and all of that stuff that will I can go have the theater experience. That's what I think is it's going to gel into. I mean, TV didn't destroy radio. It didn't destroy movies. Mm-hmm. Movies didn't destroy plays.
I thought it was video.
Video. None of those things got destroyed by the new technology.
I mean, you're right. I mean, but I'll just give you an example. I mean, like it was last week. Was last week like the Hollywood Black Film Festival and mm-hmm. our film played in that, and it just always strikes me how different the experience is when you watch something in the theater.
Yeah,
and I think it's way more pronounced when it's your own work because you like mm-hmm. spend. You probably spend like 99% of the time watching it on a screen that's like 5 inches across. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you see it when it's like, it's 30 feet across. And like all the stuff that you were, you kind of forgot about that you put into the work when you were making it, you now see it again, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that when you watch things on your phone or whatever, I mean, there's just something lost. And
I agree.
But I feel that people don't even know that they've lost it because they're so used to watching things on their phone.
Go ahead, Linnell.
Well, this goes back to what Paul was saying about the theater experience earlier. I feel like now theaters are having to adjust. That's why you see Alamo Drafthouse now going to open this place in downtown LA where people want to come to get them to come to the theater. Now I've got to have the drinks. I've got to have the meal. I've got to have, it has to be more of a one-stop experience for my night, or it's got to be a big event mm-hmm. movie, Marvel, 3D. You know, they're tacking 3D onto everything. Even though they didn't shoot it in 3D, they just added on just to say, okay, well, we got to make people, get away from their 5-inch screen to come see this movie. So I don't know. I always had the sad dream to open a one screen art house theater in like Southwest Illinois.
We can get that little place.
We can make that happen for you.
We can go get that place that I saw The Handmaiden at, where it's like one show. I walked in and I'm like that Art Deco building, and it's like I was like the only person in the audience. Okay, and the three people walked in, and I'm like. If I could get this place and hook it up.
A type of theater where you get your regulars and everyone kind of knows your name type thing. And,
Gladys,
Earl, yes. And they come to the matinee every
week.
What
you're describing, if someone was a smart executive, what you're describing is a market that's not being served. Right?
And like a weekend special, like art flicks.
Or is it a market we miss?
I absolutely believe that there is a giant market still out there for that $50-70 million movie. That movie that's mm-hmm. just a great story mm-hmm. with great.
Yeah, definitely.
But because they are allowing the marketing people to be in charge of these decisions.
That's right.
And so people now are turning. They're like, well, everybody's turning to streaming and everything. Well, yeah, because that's where the good stuff is.
Yeah.
Put good stuff in the movie.
Yeah, if the stuff was shit, they wouldn't be watching it.
Trust, right. we will go see it.
Again, underestimating the audience's intelligence, which is, that's what changed cable television is. They started, everybody says Sopranos. It was actually Oz before that.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They just assume the audience is smart, and we're not going to pander, and we're not going to dumb things down. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get it, you don't get it.
Then you're not the audience. Then you're not my target audience.
And that is why cable television is this giant entity right now that's strangling broadcast because of that, and broadcast just doesn't get it.
Mm-hmm. They're still dum-da-dum-da-dum.
Well, you know why? Because the model of cable is the same as Netflix. It's the same as Amazon. It's, in a weird way, it's not even the same as Hulu because that's kind of broadcast, really. But the model is these things that we're watching and everyone goes so crazy about are just placeholders until the next commercial. That's where they make their money. They have these big upfronts every year to show the advertisers, here's our new slate. And if all of those, let's say you made, let's say The West Wing, and you did your upfronts, and all the advertisers were like, what the fuck was that, NBC? Mm-hmm. We would never have seen The West Wing. Mm-hmm. All of America would have never seen that awesome show that ran so long because the commercials people wouldn't, we're not selling our shit on that show.
Right.
And here's how antiquated that system is. The whole reason that a broadcast television series premieres in September is because from the 50s, the car companies put their new cars out in September.
Right.
And they ran the studios, and they sponsored all the shows.
That's right.
And that's why we have a television season that is September to May, because of the car company. It's not people, you know, it's not summer vacation or anything.
And nor is it based on science.
Right. And that's 65 years ago.
Yes.
Outdated.
Yes.
And then they act still, like crazy. Then they all lose their minds. Everybody's acting like, oh my God, it's Moses coming back with the tablets when Netflix or Amazon puts out these shows. And I'm like, because the show is the product. HBO already taught you this.
Right.
HBO used to be the joke network that showed crappy B-grade movies. Like, what is cable? What is...
Unboxing.
Right, right. Literally, like those weird, like knockoffs of King Solomon's Mines, the bad version of King Solomon's Mines,
which I love. Right. The grade B movies,
Quartermain, and so.
And then some executive team came in at HBO and said, "Are you guys crazy? You know what we got here?" And after that, they were making their own stuff. Mm-hmm. They were bringing first grade movies in, and everyone, and they started saying, "What? It's not TV. It's HBO." What the difference was is the product was like going into a bookstore or a record store. Mm-hmm. When you show up at HBO, we're giving you this. We're not selling you soap. We don't care what you buy, except this. You got to pay for this.
Right.
And that, you know what? You're 100% right. And David Simon talks to this, and that is where HBO went down the drain after a while, because Chris Albrecht, when he started that, he wanted, if you can't see this anywhere on TV, then that's what I want to put on HBO. Oz, you know, The Sopranos, The Wire, like, no one is going to put this on. I want to put this on. And then they had such unbelievable success that, and Albrecht, you know, did what he did and went off the edge. But then the executives in charge there, instead of continuing that mindset of give us something that no one else put on, they were like, what's the next Sopranos? What's the next thing? We got to find it. So you saw that between, you know, up until Game of Thrones, like there was a run where HBO was just like swinging and missing and swinging and missing.
But to me, I still feel that if you exclude Game of Thrones, they're still missing on so much. Like, there's nothing, like I was trying 100%. To, I was trying to watch that Big Little Liars the other day.
No chance I was watching that show.
So
I only watched 10 minutes.
Who cares?
Wow. We don't waste time.
About, that's, isn't that what soap operas are for?
I said to myself, where's my next episode of The Expanse? Because that's cool to me. I mean, The Expanse, you know, there's no one doing that
and
type
no one's
of show.
Watching
let me see
and nobody,
the show.
Yes, nobody's watching.
But it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. But let me talk about a show that I would not have normally watched, but I put on things in the background when I'm writing sometimes. And sometimes they're so good they keep me from writing and I have to turn them off. There's a show on HBO, I mean on Hulu, called The Path. It's a show about, I thought, about culty stuff and, you know, probably taking little jabs at Scientology.
Well, they created their own cult now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But
Myerism.
Like, I thought it was going to be a sort of a thinly veiled, let's smack Scientology around. Not that I care one way or the other, but I've seen that. I don't need to see it. So I put it on as background noise. Mm-hmm. That show is the shit.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no way it would have been on any of the letter networks. There's no possible way. There'd been too much quote unquote controversy. But if it's a book in a bookstore, I'm choosing. Right? I don't, if I watch NBC religiously, I'm going to complain if a show like that comes on the air. That's not my network.
Right.
But if I'm watching it on Hulu and there's many options and I'm like, or the other one, Shut-Eye, about the Roma community, the criminal mafia Roma community that handles all of the psychics in town. Whoever thought of that as a basis for a show is a goddamn genius. And putting the people in that they put in, plus roles for women, female director, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, this is not brain surgery. This is just letting the people who are experts in their various fields do the thing they do. I'm not yelling at the accountant. Right? I'm not telling the head of the network to not run the network whatever particular way. They have expertise in an area that I don't know. I've seen those boards. I can't fathom that crap. I'm like, I don't know how you're placing. I don't know what algorithms in your head. Don't care. My job is to make stuff. And I do it really well. So just let me. Right? Then you guys figure out how to market it and make money off it or whatever. Like, and I'll stop because I go on these rants. I used to write. Paul and I worked on a show during the transition between a 5-act structure and a 6-act structure on scripts. And there was a lot of resistance from shows because after a certain amount, you're writing for commercial breaks. But stories have to build a particular way. 10,000 years of human society tells us how stories work. So after, and I'm not exaggerating, 10,000 years of figuring out how to construct stories. No, we got to put an extra commercial break.
But the rules of TV are right before the commercial break, you have to have some kind of a little minor upswing to make sure people come back in the tone, right? The music of the show, okay? So there's a lot of pushback because, like, five acts is too many. It's supposed to be three, right? I got to the point where I was like, screw it. This is what they do when they put a movie on broadcast TV. It's not written for their structure, so they just shove in a commercial where it's time to put in a commercial. Good enough for my show. I'm just writing the show. No commercial breaks. That's how I do. I'm not recommending that for baby writers, but that's what I do.
I do recommend it. I stopped, and it was because of that show we were on and what happened. I will not write anything anymore with act breaks.
Really?
Why?
I mean, one, because there's the streaming model is so much a monster right now, a giant animal.
But heretic.
Also, it's four acts you got away with because it was like there's act one, two and three is act two, and four is act three.
Right.
When it got five and then beyond that, it's just you're not going to get as good a product if you're writing to those act breaks. So what I do is my feeling is that's why I'll hire some great post people. That's why I'll hire some great editors and let them find those act breaks. And if you tell a great story, you're going to find an act break within the, 45 seconds or whatever that you need to have it.
So you don't subconsciously have it in your head of where you think it is?
At first I did, but not anymore.
It's so freeing.
Yeah.
But the other thing you'll notice is if you're writing, basically you're writing a short film anyway. Yeah. Every episode of TV is basically a short film.
Yeah, the sequences.
Right?
Yeah.
You'll find the way you tell a story, whether you put out breaks in it or not, the act breaks are generally disruptive, regardless of what the model is. But there are natural places in a story where there's a pause. Mm-hmm. So be more flexible. You can still have your freaking commercials. Just, for instance, if you're showing Sophie's Choice on TV, you're not putting the act break in right where she makes the choice between her kids, right? You're not going to put a commercial there. Nobody, the most soulless person, is not going to break it there, even if time-wise, normally, that's where the commercial break would be. Right. If you're showing that movie, showing that stuff in that movie, you're not going to put the commercial break in the middle of the strongest moment. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have that kind of flexibility, then why am I worrying about act breaks? Right. If you can do that for the movies, why are the TV people not just writing whatever and you do that?
Because it goes back to what you're saying about what's being sold is the items of our economy.
Which is why we're all flocking to Netflix and Amazon and all those places, because they let us do what we actually do.
Well, to me, there's this movie, Bright. Is that what it is? Bright.
Oh, the new Will Smith thing.
Coming out. It's not coming out until December. But it's a Netflix movie. I mean, they have a great thing.
It's like a cop superhero
cop thing. Type of thing. Orcs and stuff like that. It looks pretty dope.
I wrote that movie 15 years ago.
Really?
Everybody's like, what? That can't happen.
But I'm saying to myself,
fuckers.
But see, that's a movie that's like, okay, damn, this is a really, I'm just excited about what that is because the model that they're showing me is.
Yeah, it's a good trailer.
Is more interesting than anything else. And it looks like anything you'd see in the theaters, Disappointed that it's not going to be in theaters.
It's not going to be there?
You don't know that.
It's a movie.
You don't know that.
Netflix?
It's a Netflix, and they are saying on it.
Yeah.
It's not going to be in theaters.
And they're not till like December, right?
But if enough people jump onto Netflix to watch that thing go to theaters.
But he's saying that's not there.
Yeah, but because like their little thing says, only in, and then in switches to only on, and then Netflix.
Right.
And also, I think that Netflix kind of got burned. This is, in my opinion, I think that there's pushback in the Hollywood community about Netflix because they didn't give Beast of No Nations like any love last year because they only did like 1 week in the theater.
That movie was great,
but people were at Amazon put Manchester in the Sea by the theater for a while, and so they're getting Oscar nominations.
That's a flat out racism. Nate Parker and Casey Affleck thing is 100% racism.
Yeah, I agree.
It is just, there's a guy.
Nate Parker was accused
of something 20 or some year, call it, how many years, 20, 25 years ago, was found innocent, and that destroyed that movie and him and any chances of it. Whereas the movie that came out at the same Sundance, those were the two movies that came out of that Sundance, and here's a guy that within the last 3 years has paid off two people to not talk about virtually the exact same thing, and he's a hero right now. Like that's just
well,
my
he's connected.
Opinion.
I mean, his,
but that yeah, to me
he's
because
his brother
you look at,
and Matt Damon produced
right,
the movie.
And you, but you look at that at Birth of a Nation. How can that movie be ignored across and this and look, and I'm saying this as somebody that puts no stock into award shows or anything and say it's all crap and mm-hmm. it doesn't hype. Matter. But it's those two movies when you put them up next to each other, I want to hear somebody make a non-racism argument to me yeah. that I would buy mm-hmm. because I don't see any other reason mm-hmm. for it.
That there isn't any other.
Well, no, you're right. I mean, and honestly, I had a hard time getting through Manchester by the Sea. I mean, there's very few films that I'll watch where I start getting restless. I was getting restless watching that movie because I was kind of like, this movie's not about anything. It's not about anything. You know?
I mean, I enjoyed it until the very but last 10, 15 minutes of it. Then I said, what?
And then you figure out, you know,
this is how you're going to leave
unless
me?
Unless it's M. Night Shyamalan, you no. shouldn't be doing yeah. this.
Wait, but I'm watching, lead me this way.
I'm watching the movie, and I'm kind of like, okay, so now I know what's happening, but I'm still, it's not about anything. It's I mean, like this. If this movie's about grief, it's a bad movie. About
that's how I felt about La La Land. Though. I didn't make it through La La Land.
You know, and that's why
that.
I was disappointed that they decided to give Ken Lonergan the award for writing this movie. So I was like, really?
Yep.
This is not.
And you read the script.
I read the script too.
And here's why I 100% agree with that, because I've had, you know, I have my whole rant about that all screenwriting books are bullshit and you can't, you know, like stories have their own built-in structure. You don't have to write the structure.
Yeah. Right.
And that's a great point that Chris is making. Like Manchester by the Sea, you compare, you know, there's a character that, you know, there's no arc, there's no story. You're just, it's like a snapshot. It's like, here's an hour and a half stuff. In this thing, mm-hmm. but like I compare that, you know, and what's what was it? Winter's Bone.
Mm. Oh, Christ. Wow!
The
wow.
movie that,
yeah.
that
oh,
Jennifer
loved. That yeah. movie, yeah.
and that director okay, cannot
so
get work.
To this. You're shitting me. Listen to this.
Yeah,
look at that. That screenplay, that movie, that character does not change at all in that movie. She is the same at the end she was at the beginning. There is no story in that movie. I got to find the dad. Finds it. You know, it's like there's. It has all, it is so set up to be garbage. Right. You know, it breaks every single rule. Mm-hmm. It does the exact, and yet to me, you are compelled mm-hmm. and you are brought in, and that world is mm-hmm. so evocative. It is so visceral and real, and that script is so great. And then you look at Manchester by the Sea, which is kind of plays in that same playground or at least that same neighborhood as far as of mm-hmm. a very small story about just kind of watching people. And it's just like, What is going on? Yeah, what is like
you know
I don't.
What it is?
It's like
what I think what's happened a lot is certainly in movies, and I think it does speak to this sort of need for blockbusters in a sort of abstruse kind of way. Is that the Nora Ephron dies, right?
Right.
Queen of romantic comedy. She reestablished how they work, everything, mm-hmm. and then what you saw right after that was a shitload of. I really wish I was Nora Ephron romantic comedies, yeah, yeah. literally sometimes lifting scenes out of these earlier mm-hmm. films. And they all flopped. Like 100% of them fell apart because you were trying to do it.
Well,
right?
Because they're not about anything.
This is what I'm saying. They're okay, not. They're okay, just about the structure.
Look, there's a movie. I want to say it's called All About My Mother. Believe mm-hmm. it's a Pedro Almodovar.
Oh yeah, All About My Mother. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
That's a movie about grief.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That really puts his foot in his ass in Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
And even another movie came out this year. This other movie came out that no one talked about, no one saw. You know, this new Pedro film. And it's like it goes back to what I was saying before about these foreign films. They know how to make these movies that just like shock the shit out of you with how.
Yeah, but they got words I got to read in them. I don't go see. I don't go to the movies to be reading people. Like that's
You're
why I go to the movies. So I don't like books. That's why I go to the movies. So I don't need to be reading at the movies. I'm just telling all y'all right now. Start dubbing your shit. Start dubbing your shit.
Were you at OBS when we did when Isaiah Washington came and spoke to us that one day?
Well, Isaiah, yeah.
Yeah. And Isaiah said something I'll never forget. And this is like in the height of all the bullshit he was going through, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it still stuck to me. He said, if I come in your house and you don't have no books, you suspect.
Yeah, look, listen.
you saw I jumped up and clapped. Yes. I said, look, shit, if I come to your house and just, you ain't got no books?
No.
We not dating?
The thing, that's the, that, right.
We
that
not having no
Facebook.
Children?
You don't date the guy.
You not coming to the cookout? Yeah. Your people ain't coming to the cookout?
Like, if you don't have the wherewithal to even have them for show.
Thank you.
Not dateable.
You know. You can't. Like, you cannot have someone who can't read. That's a whole nother story.
Do it like in that movie, The Game, you know, how it's just the spine. You know,
no, because I'm picking up your books and I'm looking.
Somebody might touch them.
Yeah, that's me. I'm looking.
Put them in a case.
No.
You have to put them in a case. It's my special book.
Locked. It's right. Control.
And then you say, why are these books locked? Well, I don't really like other people's, like, oils off their skin. I wear my special.
These are artists.
Yeah, if you want to, you let me know which book you want to read.
No, then I'd be thinking, like, is this the ninth gate?
Crazy.
Is this the ninth gate? Yeah. Like, is this, what's the
kind
of books
are these?
Now I
got to break the glass and read all these
books. Now I got to get in your books.
Yeah.
Well, thank y'all. I appreciate all you guys coming. Mm-hmm. And where are you at, Linnell?
You can find me on Twitter, at Linnell White.
So, Jeffrey.
That's it. Boom.
That's all you get.
Your strange code phrases have confused me.
Or if you're really, I don't know. I don't know if I should put this out there, but like.
Just give me your address.
No. For those of you out there like me, who I was crushed by the loss of George Michael. I'm still not, and they haven't buried that man, whatever. So I've been like on Tumblr.
They haven't buried him yet?
What?
No, they have not buried him because they're still, I don't know. We need Scotland Yard on this. We need James Bond. We need everybody on the case.
What are they doing with his body? How are they not burying him?
They're still trying to figure out what caused
his death.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's.
What do they think it is?
I don't know. You have to talk to the coroner over.
Much too sexy for this world.
I agree. Too talented. Right.
Too talented.
So I've been like on Tumblr. Mm-hmm. I have a little Uncovering George Michael, and I've been just like,
oh, that's disgusting.
Trying to get my blogging like my thoughts and my regret.
The way you stalk a star is when they're
still
alive.
No, I'm not stalking him.
She
wants like paying homage.
Yes.
I'm paying homage. Like, there are all these videos that are out there that I never saw.
Same. Yeah.
The videos that were
live performances.
Live performances. Interviews, and I'm just like, oh man, he was so great.
I love him. I love him.
This is the last time I'm going to share with you people.
I feel you. No, George Michael.
Where are you at,
listen,
Lisa?
Listen, come George Michael was part of the three, the holy three.
Yes.
You know, the Thin White Duke, David Bowie.
Thank you.
And next month, Prince, a year has gone by already, and he had George Michael. It's been a year. Yeah. So those three were like pivotal to
all
my growing up.
All in 2016.
Yeah. All just, you know, all in 2016.
2016
so,
took a lot.
Yeah. It was brutal. So
2016 was a serial killer.
Yeah. It was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really was. Mm-hmm. So I feel you on that. And I didn't realize that they were still trying to.
The fact that he hasn't been buried is like the closure's
like,
not.
Yeah.
Not
like
really
I
there.
Thought, well, maybe they're trying to plan some big thing. And then the second part of me is like, there's
the
something going
the
on.
The medical examiner's holding his body.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
weird.
Yeah. Yes, it's Christmas
Day.
Bodies don't keep that long.
They froze him.
Frozen.
The thing. If they're keeping him somewhere, then that must be some weird ass.
Yeah, I'm trying hard not to think about all the damn.
Where you at, Jeff Thorne?
Well, clearly I'm on Twitter from time to time at Game of Thorns. Game of Thorns. Oh, that way. Let me say it one more time in case that was gone. Game of Thorns.
They know who you is, bitch.
At my website, which is about to be revamped, jeffreythorne.com. Mm-hmm. And I just reconstituted the John 19 Twitter and the Winterman Books Twitter.
Yes. Okay. Sell it.
I'm at all of those places for
Mosaic.
Updates.
And Mosaic. Yes.
Mosaic comes out next Wednesday, but it will be too late for this, I think.
I'm dropping this tomorrow.
Oh, really? Yeah. So this Wednesday, go get you some Mosaic.
And if you haven't read this comic, get on it.
Yes.
Because one of the great things about it is it's a slow burn. You read those first couple issues, and you're like, okay. And then it starts to suck you in.
Mm-hmm.
And
issue three, like you said.
Almost like it's my job to do that.
Yes.
Is that electronic?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can get it on Comixology or on Amazon. Also, there's going to be a trade paperback in, I think, April or May for the first arc.
Okay.
So... You know, do your thing. But buy the floppies because that keeps the book alive.
Yes.
And if you don't buy the floppies, they kill the book. Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you at, Chris?
I'm at shadowboxercinema.net. No new stuff yet.
No. Soon. What about your Twitter?
Oh, my Twitter is at unauthorizedCBD.
Cool. Polly Paul, our special guest today.
I'm always,
always
annoying people on Twitter. It's at FizzHog. Two G's and two Z's.
Where did that come from again?
You don't want to know that.
Come on now.
Story. It's the worst origin story ever.
That's its own show. You need
okay, I'll let it slide.
It's bad. But I'm on there ranting a lot.
We rant together from time to time.
All right, Lisa, where you at?
I'm always on Twitter. Mm-hmm. As y'all know, I was on Twitter last night? Yeah, because today's Sunday. Last night, after the reading, got back in time to hang out with my peeps. Hey, Geek Soul Brother, Geek Soul we were watching Crazy Head on Netflix and live tweeting the first two episodes. Hilarious. And yeah, so I'm always on Twitter. It's my name. What fresh hell is this?
That's what's
and yeah, come find me. Come holler at me. I will be down in Florida in a couple of weeks at ICFA, the International Festival for the Creative, something, whatever, it's Fantastic in the Arts, sorry. The International Conference for the Fantastic in the Arts. So that's where all the academic people get in. They talk about sci-fi, but really it's an excuse for me to hang out with all my friends.
Okay, cool.
So, yay.
And I'm your host. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and drink a little bit.
Yeah.
Tequila on.
Yeah. Orlando. No, I'm pretty mild. But when I drink, it's high quality.
You couldn't even get through a table read you without looking at the
table. You couldn't get through a table read without wine.
It's for Hilliard.
You drank for Hilliard?
The one person who doesn't drink.
No,
right?
I said not to take the two. I didn't. I decided not to drink the shots for Hilliard.
But on another normal day.
Oh, hell yes. Top shelf.
No.
Funny.
Top.
Where are you and at, Hilliard?
Yeah. I am your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. Follow the show, Screenwriters RR on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrentroom@gmail.com. We probably gonna get some mail because y'all was saying some shit.
what? Us?
Y'all was saying some shit. I'm gonna email every one of y'all the bullshit too.
Let Gwen show up.
I got something for her.
Exactly.
You're
going to
start bleeping out some stuff.
We don't bleep out nothing.
I said she could act.
This is raw shit.
We don't bleep out nothing.
Unfiltered.
I complimented an actress, a very talented actress.
Any questions, screenwritersrentroom@gmail.com. The hubby's calling me. And what else? Oh, follow us on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We need that for the metrics. And everybody, please join me. This will be a 2-part episode.
Yes.
What? Yes, sir. Join us on the show. We keep it real.
What?
We keep it opinionated.
Really?
We keep it what, everybody?
2017.
Peace, y'all.
Ciao.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the rent room.